Good morning. It's Tuesday, May 13th, and you are listening to The Morning Voice. I'm your Tuesday host, and we focus on engagement and civic engagement specifically here on this show. We've got Matt Neely behind the glass, as always, keeping me on time and target, as well as being the selector of the music to bring us in and out. Matt, how you doing today?
I am doing just fine. Happy Tuesday. Good to see our old friend Randy Graff. I haven't seen him. I'm looking forward to talking to him in a few minutes. And been a while, but it's great to see him. I know he's doing all sorts of great things down in Green Valley, Sahuarito with the Chamber of Commerce.
Oh yeah. There's definitely a lot going on down in that area. There's so many different questions I want to ask, but I also know Randy's got some definite specific issues he wants to bring up. Before we go to Randy Graff as a guest, I just want to mention yesterday was the celebration of life and the burial for George Cunningham. So city council member Paul Cunningham's father, but sure, more importantly, a true leader in this community. He served at the state and local level. He ran for Congress at one point. And I think it was really kind of a classy move yesterday, Matt, and even Paul acknowledged it from the podium. As you know, one of George Cunningham's desires was to one day be in Congress. He really wanted to be in Congress. I mean, he was a budget director. He was a state representative and a leader in the state. He was the chief of staff for Governor Rose Mofford. There's so many things that he did leading this community that I was totally unaware of. I mean, the Cunningham name I knew was Paul, and that was it. But when I met George about 3 months ago, and that was the first time I'd ever met him, and we had a great conversation, a great talk, and so it all... I know he's been having some health issues, but it all still came kind of as a shock, as I think it always does. But at yesterday's event, it was a dignitary lineup that were speaking. Governor Hobbs spoke. But the interesting thing was at one point, Paul got up and he said, you know, my dad's whole goal was to be in Congress, and he never quite made it there. But in what's a really classy move, I'd like to introduce Congressman Juan Ciscomani. Yeah. And Juan came up and basically shared that he's going to read a long story of George Cunningham's life and the impact he had on Arizona into the congressional record.
Yeah, that's great.
So he will be in there. And it was a very interesting thing. Even Juan's team was standing around going, look at these conversations going on, because I think Juan may have been the sole Republican elected official in the room.
Yeah.
And it was a who's who of Democratic leadership, as you'd expect, at his services yesterday.
So I didn't really know him. Obviously knew of him, but I did see him about a year ago. He spoke at the memorial service for John C. Scott. And so he told some stories about the old days up in Phoenix when they were during the legislative sessions, and a couple of funny stories. But it was... I did actually see him speak once, and very involved in state politics for a long time.
And Dave Jankowski gave his eulogy. A friend who was ran the Department of Commerce for a while, but they both were Tucsonans, so they made the trips. So he had a lot of stories. And the funniest part is, there was a word that was used in a celebration of life I never thought I'd hear. It was one that was very common to me in the military. I don't think you have to do it, because it's just Bohica. He said Bohica was one of George Cunningham's favorite lines to say every once in a while. And based on that and Matt's reaction behind the glass, he's laughing, waving me off. We'll leave it at that.
Wow.
If you're curious, you could probably get on. There's some, you know, a lot of things on the on this thing they call the internet. You can find out what Bohica stands for.
He actually
explained each word. I was sitting there and turned to the person next to me. I'm going, you think he's going to give it? And sure enough, he gave the full definition. So it was truly an event that I think the Cunningham family would be very proud of. It was a great job. Ryan Harper did the, he was kind of the MC on it and told a lot of funny George Cunningham stories. And you know, I wish I'd gotten to know him better, because he sounds like he was quite a character, and he really did have a lot of experience in this region.
Yeah.
So, all right, so what I'd like to do now is switch over to our guest, and Randy Graff is both the chairman of the board and the president and CEO of the Sarita, or the Green Valley, it's GVSCC, the Green Valley Sarita Chamber of Commerce. And Randy, appreciate you coming on the show with me today. I don't know if you would know when we first met.
Oh, how many years ago was that?
It was in 2001.
Okay.
I'd moved to Tucson in 99. My kids were going to school. You were running for legislature.
Yep, first run for legislature.
First run for the legislature, and because, as always, education and education funding is a big issue, at Canyon View Elementary School, we held the thing with all the candidates for LD 26, I believe it was back then. Is that right?
It was LD 30.
LD 30.
LD 30.
Okay. LD 30.
Covered Green Valley, Sarita, the east side of Tucson, went all the way out to Sierra Vista.
Yep, so. I lived there, and that's where I first met you. And that's where you participated in that panel. You definitely highlighted the differences between you and the other three candidates. There was no doubt about it. And I think your quote was, if you want the only true conservative sitting up here, you need to vote for me.
After 4 years in the legislature, yeah, there weren't many conservatives serving up there from southern Arizona. Period. I mean, coast to coast.
A very true statement. We'll get a little bit into that. One of the things, Randy, on this show that we try to do is every time somebody's a first-time guest, it's not just about what they're currently engaged in, what they're currently doing. It's a little bit of background of how they came to this region, how they got involved, and what it was that made them decide to really step up and get engaged. So if you could share your story. We've been talking golf before you came on there because you have that background, but just share your story about where you grew up.
Well, originally born and raised in Green Bay, Wisconsin. I was born there 2 months before they hired Vince Lombardi, so it was a great place and time to grow up, not far from Lambeau Field. And got to go to a lot of games as a kid and go to the practices, and it was just a wonderful, wonderful community.
That would have been an incredible experience for anybody who's a sports fan at all, but for anybody, really, because the Green Bay Packers at that time were a story.
Well, and understand, I mean, Green Bay at the time was, I think, population was about 55,000 people, except on game day, and there were really no other sports in the Green Bay region, so we didn't have really any major hockey or basketball or anything like that. So, I mean, the town was just immersed in Green Bay Packer football. If the Packers won, it could be 30 below and snow and ice, and nobody cared. Everybody was walking 3 feet off the ground. If Green Bay lost, the town was depressed for a week until the following Sunday when it was game time again. But actually played high school golf against Bart Starr Jr. I got to go over to his house after one of our matches and meet Bart Starr and his wife Sherry. And so, yeah, just a good small community and with a pro football team that was best in the league.
Well, it is a great place to grow up back in the Midwest. My wife grew up in Iowa, and as she says, she's not going back. We love Arizona. We're staying here. Great place to grow up, and she took her daughter went back with us every summer to get kind of those values that you can pick up in the Midwest.
There's a lot I miss back there. I mean, the Friday night fish fries, the cheese curds, the Packers, but you get out here and get used to this climate. I don't think I could survive another winter back there working. I got a couple of brothers back there, and ice fishing and snowmobiling and all the stuff they do in the wintertime, but I'm happy here.
You can visit them if you want.
You can visit them in the summertime when the weather's a little nicer and you can get out on the lake, do some fishing.
We love Door County, but that's where we're doing a Wisconsin advertisement right now. So what brought you to Southern Arizona?
When I was 13, I decided I wanted to play golf, so got a set of golf clubs and just fell in love with the game. Graduated high school there in 77. Went to college for a year and a half, Ripon College in Wisconsin, but then ended up going out to San Diego to the San Diego Golf Academy, which was a two-year school for country club management. Graduated there, met my wife there at the school, and we floated around California after I graduated there in 81 for about 2.5 years. And we were up in the Bay Area, down in L.A. for a year, and had a chance to get out of California and come to Green Valley. New golf course had opened up there, and my parents had just moved down a couple years before that from Wisconsin down to Tucson. So it was sort of a good mix, getting here close to my parents. And, 1984, November, got here, and here we are 40 years later.
Green Valley in 1984, what was that like?
Oh, Green Valley at that time was maybe 10,000, 11,000 people. Sarita wasn't even a town yet. Sarita was pretty much just sort of a rural setting, 1 acre, 5 acre, parcels, people living there. So the combined community might have been 11,000, 12,000 people. La Cañada, the main drag on the west side of the freeway, was still up and down through the washes. We shopped at a Lucky's grocery store. It was just a nice little quiet retirement community, you know, 55. And most homes, you had to be 50. Somebody had to be 55 or over. Nobody under 18 living in the house. So
how do you pull that one off?
Well, there was an apartment complex down there that was not age restricted. When we moved there, my son was 3 years old. So it was a little different setting to move into and get used to. But, people at that time were retiring to play golf. And so they continued building homes and golf courses and did that and actually stayed in the golf business till about 95.
Yeah.
And then migrated out of golf.
And that's one truly amazing, because I think some of us would be incredibly jealous and will want that kind of lifestyle, but I'm sure it was not as easy as it looks, not as glamorous.
You know, as a club golf pro, you get to play some golf, but it's a business. You know, yeah. you own the pro shop. You got it. You got staff. You got to manage. Manage inventory in the pro shop. You're running the golf tournaments. You're driving range golf carts. There's a lot to do. So it's an actual business. I probably got tired of golf, because when I left Desert Hills, the private club in '95, I basically put my clubs away for a whole year. Cold turkey, didn't play a round of golf, and sort of got it out of my system.
I hope it hasn't gotten too far out of your system, because it's something I'm hoping to do a lot more in my lifetime going forward. Well, what's your handicap? And then we'll get off golf. What's your handicap?
Well, I was down at scratch at one time, but I haven't played. It'll be our chamber tournament's coming up August 2nd, and it's been 2 years since I've even touched my club. So
what you're telling me is if I can get you to play with me in a tournament, I can enter you as about an 18 handicap.
That would probably be fair.
And then we can just go, Randy's having a miraculous day.
That might be.
All right. So you got out of that. You were a general manager for a luxury vehicle service for a while.
When I got out of golf, tried a couple different things and ended up working with a group up here in Tucson. We had a fleet of Lincoln Town Cars, minivans, coaches. Did a lot of work with the resorts, so VIP car service. I was a managing partner in that for about 2 years. And in 94, I'd gotten onto the Continental School Board. A seat had opened up on the Continental School Board, and a friend that was serving on the school board convinced me to run for one of the open seats. And
there was the first taste of elected
that was,
office.
Yeah. Prior to that, never involved in politics I was just busy working and playing golf. And so that was sort of the first taste of getting in there. I spent 4 years on the Continental School Board. In the Continental School District, the oldest school district in the state, if I'm not mistaken. I think they were established in like 1912, 1914, right around statehood. But it was a small K-8 school district, about 275 students. And my son had graduated while I was serving on that. So after the four-year stint, I decided to not run again, and got involved with the local Republican Club. And then 2 years later, was the 2000 was first year of term limits, and so all three seats in our legislative district 30 at the time opened up, and some folks convinced me to throw my name in that hat.
So what was the main driving force for you of why you decided to run for state legislature?
When we were on the school board, we'd on occasion go up to Phoenix to talk about education issues. And I remember being up there 1 year, and we were trying to find our legislator at the time, and they were sort of evading us, and I couldn't figure out why. And we finally found him and brought education issues to the forefront. But it was just, like I said, at the time, with all three seats opening up in the legislature, being active with the local Republican Club for 2 years, and getting a feel for what was going on. When I decided to run, I'd never even been to the state capitol other than once or twice with the delegation from our school board. So I really didn't know what was going on up there.
Randy, that's a perfect lead into our break then. When we come back, that's the voice of Randy Graff, currently the president and CEO of the Green Valley Sarita Chamber of Commerce, former state legislature. And we just talked about his journey to Arizona and how he decided to run. And when we come back, we'll talk about what he found when he was going up to the legislature daily. You're listening to 1030 The Voice, a Bustos Media station, your only trusted local news and talk.
A little country rock on the playlist today. Start off with Poco.
Welcome back. We've got a little morning wake-up music to get you going if you're not. We appreciate you joining us today. The Morning Voice, five days a week, 7 to 9 on KVOI, 10:30. Five different hosts, five different topic areas, and five different opinions. A little bit of politics throughout almost all of them. But on this show, you'll definitely get some politics discussed. So it's about getting engaged and getting involved. We heard Randy Graff's story, and Randy Graff's the current president and CEO of the Green Valley Sarita Chamber of Commerce, but much more than that, about the story of what brought him here, he and his decision to run and get elected to represent LD30 at the state legislature. So you had a vision. You said you had gone up a couple times in your capacity as a member of a school board to try to talk education. You saw why maybe people were avoiding you on the way up. What did you find when you got up to the state legislature?
You running for the legislature in Arizona at that time, pretty easy process. I think it was the first year term limits kicked in. If you raised $25,000-$30,000, real easy, you could run for a legislative seat here in Arizona. And so, we got into the mix, got through a five-way primary, and it was a conservative district. I mean, LD30 at the time, like I said, was Green Valley, Sarita, east side of Tucson, went out to Sierra Vista, so Fort Huachuca, all that was in our district, great district. And so winning the Republican primary basically got you into the legislature.
Kind of like 25 of the current legislative districts, you win the primary and you're in.
And so we got through that. And it was amazing because after I won the primary, my partner's in that transportation company that I was involved in. So what does that mean? I said, well, January 1 or first week in January, I'll be going up to Phoenix. They said, well, that's our busy season, you know. So I said, I guess I just got myself elected out of a job into something new. So, but yeah, no, we got up there to Phoenix, and I recall going through the primary. You know, you meet some of the folks up there, and you meet some of the lobbyists and that, and they're trying to get a judge for who's going to be coming up there. And after I'd been up there a while, one of the lobbyists came to me and said, "You told me you were a moderate when you were running for the legislature." I said, "Well, until I got up here and saw how easy it was for some people to spend other people's money, I thought I was pretty moderate or common sense type thing." And it quickly, the two issues, one was the budget and spending. And I remember the first meeting when we got up there, after you get elected, you go up there for a little quick orientation, or you got the day after the primary, the day after the general election, you got to be up in Phoenix to elect leadership. And I remember the first question they asked us in the Republican caucus was, how much more money should we spend this year than we spent last year? And they were just trying to get a feel for the Republican caucus. So, you know, should we spend $50 million more or $500 million more? They wanted to get a feel. And I felt that was a pretty odd question. As Republicans, we should be trying to control the growth in government. Sort of became conservative early on in the process up there. And then the border issues and concerns about border security were between that and government spending were my two big really issues up there. And in my former time on the school board, obviously, I was on the education committee. So, and you quickly find out the differences. Just everyone supports education, but from my Democrat colleagues up there and the Republicans, just two different ideas on what constitutes a good education system.
Yeah, I've always said that nobody running for public office, two things you will always hear from them is, I support education and I'm business friendly.
Sure.
And we know how those two things look.
But what that means is completely different ballgame. So
what were your highlights? And I'm going to shift what I told you during the break, because I think I may save your Congress stories sure, till after the sure. break. You're way too easy, too good of a guest. So when you were up at the state legislature, what was kind of your highlights? If there's something that you took, you were there for two terms, you got reelected, so you did 4 years at the state legislature. What was your takeaway?
My second term, I was the majority whip in the House, but I became the state public sector chair for ALEC, the American Legislative Exchange mm-hmm. Council. There were two or three different organizations that you could join as legislators, national organizations. ALEC was the American Legislative Exchange Council, more of a pro-business. You had private sector and public sector members. And you'd get together with legislators from around the country a couple times a year And they would come up with model legislation that they thought was good for business. One of the issues that came out of one of their model legislation pieces was jury duty reform, which I took back from Alec, and we brought it to Arizona. I introduced the legislation. It was you talk to the local folks here in Pima County, and they'd send out 16,000 jury summonses to try to get a handful of people that would actually show up. So there was really no penalty if you just ignored it. So we put some teeth into it, but we also made it a little more friendly and easier to use. If you served on jury duty now, you should probably get paid a little bit more compensation for time away from work. But it was a very comprehensive piece of legislation. And introduced it. We got it passed here in its entirety in the first year that we introduced it. And Alec called me up, and they were astounded that this piece of legislation got passed anywhere in the country. And, they flew me to San Francisco to talk to legislators about how we did it here. They flew me to Chicago to talk to legislators. But it was having to meet with the Supreme Court. Some nervous times, things that put me out of my comfort zone. But really, really interesting to get something like that passed, because the next day you could have something real simple that it would take 3 years to get passed. And so it was like beating your head one day and big victory the next.
That's a good story. Thank you for sharing that one too. And I know it wasn't that drove you to run for Congress, but when we get back from the bottom of the hour break, we'll talk with Randy Graff, the president and CEO of the Green Valley Sarita Chamber of Commerce, about why he decided to run for Congress. You're listening to 1030 The Voice, trusted local news and talk. Welcome back. You're listening to The Morning Voice. I'm your host, Ted Maxwell. That's Matt Neely behind the glass, keeping me on time and on target. The Morning Voice, 5 days a week. Tomorrow, the host is Grant Kruger, and I spoke with him this morning, and he's guaranteeing me by tomorrow he'll have a great lineup. This is one of the things. Randy got a call from me yesterday saying, can you come on? And you just never know. We have our plans, and our best laid plans go to waste. Great conversation about how you came to Arizona. You're 40-year resident now of over 40 years in Green Valley, which and started not in that age requirement group. You might have worked your way into it now, so you're more than welcome accepted.
I always joked when I got old enough to live anywhere in Green Valley, I was getting out of town. Now I'm old enough to live anywhere in Green Valley, they can't get rid of me if they wanted to.
Exactly. And that you demonstrated that a lot in your willingness to run for public office. There was a moment, though, after 4 years, because you could have stayed in the state legislature for a while. You were in a safe district. You had a good following. You were the minority whip after your first term. Much bigger majority back then, too.
Yeah.
A majority whip after your first term. You had potential there, but something fired you up and you decided it was time to run for Congress.
Yeah, a big issue for me was border and border security. Yeah, there was a congressman out of Colorado, Tom Tancredo, had been down here. I got invited to go out to Cochise County, which my district went out into the Sierra Vista. And we spent a weekend out there talking to ranchers and some of the issues they were facing with some of the border security things that were going on out there. And it was just an absolute revelation and shocking to me what they were putting up with. And so border security became a big issue for me. And the conversation in D.C. was going more toward comprehensive immigration reform.
And remember, this was in 2004.
This was in 2004. Yeah, and Congressman Colby at the time was a big proponent of comprehensive immigration reform, and they had convinced President Bush into adopting comprehensive immigration reform. And my viewpoint on all that was always back into the Reagan era when they passed comprehensive immigration reform. We're gonna amnesty the people that were in here, and then we're gonna secure the border. Well, the amnesty happened, the border security never did, and so yeah. 20 years later, you're going through the same process. This time, instead of amnestying 3 million people, you're talking 10, 11, 12 million people. So I just felt we had to secure the border first, and then we can talk about what to do with folks that are here. So I decided to step up and challenge Congressman Colby in 2004. Relatively late in the process, had a primary against him. And while I wasn't successful, we did, I think we got like 43% of the vote in that primary, which...
Well, you definitely had a message that resonates. And I think that's one of the challenges even we face today. You were opposed to comprehensive border security or border reform. Sure. Because comprehensive, people always find things in a comprehensive solution they don't like. So we've talked about on this show before, you need to break it up into individual segments of it and deal with it.
That was my viewpoint on it. Yeah, my attitude. And so it was an interesting process. Like I said, you know, we weren't successful, but I decided the next spring to run again, to challenge him again. And then later on that year, Mr. Colby decided to retire. And we went through a five-way primary. I won that primary in 06. And then lost the general election to Gabby Giffords.
It was very interesting because when you were telling me about that, you threw out some names that are still well known in this region. You know, Frank Antonori, Steve Huffman. And you said it got kind of nasty.
It was a difficult primary, and our primaries are late in the year, so you know we only had about 2 months to try to repair the damage from a very difficult primary, and we weren't successful then. And it was after that general election when I lost to Gabby that my wife said, "That's it. Time to come home. You gotta get back in the real world." And
yeah, if I can jump in on this one, because this is where I kind of cut my teeth on getting involved politically, helping Frank Antonori. And Randy, that was a Donnybrook of a primary. There, like you said, it was it five? A five-way?
It was a five-way primary. Steve Huffman, Mike Jenkins, Frank Antonori. And
was Helen.
That's right. Yes.
Mike Helen was in that one. So it was really something. And there's a bunch of stories that I've probably forgotten. But I will tell you, somewhere in the early on in the campaign process, somewhere in the summer, the NRCC got involved. After everybody said, I'll spare you from having to bring this up, Randy, but the NRCC got involved with a candidate who wasn't Randy. We'll just leave some names out of it. However, that spouted a press conference. And from then on out, we had a Wall Street Journal reporter in Tucson. We had an AP stringer following the campaign. I mean, this thing was making national waves because the party kind of got involved in a primary where they said, hey, we'll support the winner of the primary. We'll stay out of the primary. That wasn't the case. So it was a Donnybrook. That was a very interesting summer.
So just to add, Randy won that primary.
Yes.
So you were the candidate out. And if you're saying RNCC came in favor of another candidate, that makes your win even that much more impressive.
It did. However, within a day or two, I was in D.C. and the reception was less than cordial. Let's put it that way.
Because everybody knew it was a close primary, you had the state Democratic Party running, sending out, I wish I still had all this stuff. I had a whole box of it. I think I finally got rid of it. But you had the Democratic Party sending out mailers to try to influence people to vote for somebody. So the Arizona Democratic Party was getting involved in the campaign, sending out mailers in the primary, saying vote for this Republican candidate in the primary, vote for that Republican. It was just amazing.
It was a wild time. And to be honest, I'm probably better off just being out of it after that and done. It was nice being home right after that. I remember sitting in my backyard with a straw hat on and a rake and a shovel and my dog and a cold beer. And I said, you know, I don't have to be anywhere tonight. No more campaigning. And life went on.
Well, as with everything in life, you didn't take a whole lot of time off. So you did some consulting for almost 6 years, but you were part of the Sarita or the Green Valley Sarita Chamber of Commerce since like 2008 or even earlier than that.
2007, the president and CEO of the chamber at the time, Jim DiGiacomo, asked me to start up a government relations committee. The chamber had never really delved into politics or advocacy or anything to that effect. And so we started up a government relations committee. I got involved with the chamber in 07 and did that for about 10 years, chaired that committee, had a lot of great members serve on the committee with us. And started getting the chamber maybe at least considering some of the issues that impact the business community. You know, they weren't quite ready to delve into it a great deal, but there are ballot initiatives and things that come up that certainly have an impact on the business community. And the old adage, if you're not at the dinner table, you may be on the menu type thing. So we were at least starting to raise some of those issues with the board of directors and the business community.
And then in 2017, you actually came in And I believe I got that year. No, 2019. July of 2019, you came in and became the president and CEO of the chamber.
Yeah. I first got on the board of directors. I was on. Got elected to the board in 2017. Spent 2 years on the board. I was board chair in 2018, and it was time we were going to look for a new president, CEO, and a fellow board member or two looked at me and said, "This is a perfect role for you, and you need to slip into that that office there and take it over." So yeah, I started there in August of 2019, and absolutely love it.
So I've been in the public policy space since 2013, and I'll be real honest, that your chamber, Green Valley Sarita Chamber of Commerce, has become much more prominent since you've taken over, as far as advocacy and as far as engagement. So what are the big issues right now for your chamber that you're working on?
Big issues, a couple things we got going on in the chamber. We got a great board of directors. We got a good mix. I mean, down in Green Valley, we got Freeport MacMoran, we got Caterpillar, their proving grounds down there. So, my board mix, 11 board members. We got small home-based business to big corporations. So we got a great board of directors. A couple things we got going on this year. One is everybody talks about workforce development. And we've been fortunate to be working with the Phoenix Chamber Foundation. They've got a program called Elevate Ed AZ that they started up 5 years ago in the Maricopa County. Started with one high school, one school district, one high school. They are currently in six districts and 21 different high schools in Maricopa County, and they're finally looking to reach out and take this across the state. And we are the first district in the state outside of Maricopa County that are going to be implementing the program. We're hoping to have the MOUs signed here in the next week or 10 days. And it's bringing college and career coaches into the two high schools in the Sarita Unified School District. Dr. Valenzuela down there does a fantastic job.
Man, he's a great superintendent.
Great superintendent. They got a real strong career and technical education program down there. So the program will hire a college and career coach in each high school to work with their counselors there, a district director, and then a business liaison that will actually work through the chamber. Getting the business community involved. But they're identifying eight to 10 high demand, high wage industries here in Southern Arizona in the Green Valley, Sarita, Tucson area. And we're going to be trying to direct students into the CTE programs, getting credentials, advanced placement, dual enrollment with Pima Community College, and getting students that are ready to get into the workforce. It includes job shadowing, internships, getting the teachers out into the business community during the off season. It's great to teach theory all day long, but what do the businesses actually need? So getting the teachers out, and it's a very comprehensive program, and we're looking to kick that off and have it in the school district this year.
Well, that is a great step forward for your region, and to say that you're the first region to pull Elevate at AZ down outside of Maricopa County is a huge win.
It is. It is
a good program. It's workforce-based, which creates opportunities for good jobs. It addresses all the issues.
It does. And like I said, identifying high-wage, high-demand jobs, and hopefully getting our students, when they come out of school, they can have either some of the credentials they need to go right to work, or a lot of them come out with their advanced placement. They get 2 years of college by the time they graduate high school, and so they're that much closer to getting into those industries. So. It's going to be a great program, and they'll be expanding it in more locales in Southern Arizona, but we're the first one, so we're sort of the pilot program outside of Maricopa County.
Well, like I said, Randy, I have seen, it's not a knock on any of your predecessors, but I have seen since you've come into that chamber that it's really taking a step forward towards trying to change not only your community, but still being engaged even throughout the region, which is important because Green Valley and Sarita is a large portion of the Pima County region.
We're growing fast. Sarita is the second fastest growing community in Arizona. Last I saw, and our combined community now is probably between 65 and 70,000 people.
And you've got a mayor who's incredibly proud of his town.
Mayor Murphy, yep. Just
and doing a great job.
Town council meeting last night, so they're talking economic development last night. So we work close. We've got a great relationship with the mayor and the town of Sarita. There is a business-friendly community as you can find. So between the school district and Dr. Valenzuela, Mayor Murphy, and town manager Shane Dilley, we're in great shape.
So perfect lead-in. We're going to save what I think is one of the most critical articles. You've written an op-ed recently, and we'll discuss that and what kind of the future of that region, one of the strengths it's got for everything else you've been talking about today. So you're listening to 1030 The Voice, a trusted local news and talk. This is The Morning Voice, and we will be right back. Welcome back. It's 7:52, and you're listening to The Morning Voice. My guest today is Randy Graff, the president and CEO of the Green Valley Sarita Chamber of Commerce, former elected official. We've kind of been all over the board, but what I want to jump to for this last half, you talked about some of the thriving economies down in Green Valley and Sarita, and probably one of the issues that is the most visible. It always seems to be getting tangled up, but it looks like it's ready to go, is mining. And you wrote an op-ed that was published in the Green Valley Sarita Chamber. I'm going to see if I can push
the Green Valley News. Yeah.
The Green Valley News. Yeah. See if I can push to get in the Arizona Daily Star, if you don't mind as well, because I think it hit a lot of the arguments for a region of why mining in the state of Arizona is so important. So just wanted to hear your thoughts on
HUD Bay is a member of our chamber, and they've got their Copper World project out there. They obviously have their detractors. And I'll go back a few years. I did community relations work for Rosemont Copper for a little over five years. And, when they were trying to get the Rosemont mine going over on the east side of the Santa Rita Mountains. And, the detractors have all the environmental concerns and that were fully understandable, but mining today is a whole different ball game than it was 50, 60, 70 years ago. I mean, Freeport-McMoRan, the great community partner, has the Sierrita mine down there right outside of Green Valley. And those mines started in the late 50s, entirely different set of circumstances there from an environmental standpoint. The Rosemont, the hoops that they had to jump through from an environmental standpoint were just amazing. I mean, cactuses all had to be removed and replanted someplace and then afterwards put back. One of the big things is water, obviously, is always a concern. And just to the level of misinformation maybe that comes out, I recall on the Rosemont project, for example, it was going to have an impact on Cienega Creek, which supplies 20% of the water to Tucson. So a little tributary from where the Rosemont mine was going to be, they turned that into the Rosemont copper mine was going to be impacting 20% of Tucson's water. But when you actually looked at the numbers, Cienega Creek supplies 20% of the water to Tucson Basin. But there was a tributary that supplied 5% of the water to Cienega Creek. And it was another little stream that supplied 5% of the water to that tributary. So you take 5% of 5% of 20%, you're looking at like 0.1%. So the impact wasn't going to be what the opposition would try to make it to. But in today's Twitter world or X world, a 15-second soundbite saying that Rosemont's going to impact 20% of the water, that's the end of the discussion. It takes you a couple minutes to explain this tributary and get the actual factual information out there. So the Copper World project is going through the same thing now, and the folks that were able to basically successfully shut down the Rosemont mine now are dealing with the fact that that whole property, when it was purchased years and years ago, when Pima County had a chance to purchase it and take it off the copper map, if you want to say it that way, is now dealing with some good copper projects right here on the west side of the Santa Ritas.
So one of the things that I think is interesting to that is now it's all on private land. That's one of the reasons they can't really, it's more difficult for them to challenge it.
Exactly. Rosemont needed about 3,500 acres of Coronado National Forest land. This project is over on the west side of the Santa Rita Mountains, and it's mostly on private and state land. And so, the impacts or the permits that are needed aren't near as difficult.
And the level of work they've gone through, they've had multiple elected officials. Some have come in very discreetly because they don't want to be associated with mining to see what's going on. They've really done their work down there. And the irony is the folks who were against Rosemont, which was on the other side of the mountain, has forced them into coming to where the copper is. And they've actually found higher grade copper.
Much higher grade.
And the economic impact it will have on your community. We've got about 20-30 seconds.
Final thoughts? In a nutshell, you know, 400 to 500 good paying jobs, tax revenues to the county, tax revenues to the school districts. You can't dismiss those benefits. It's a two-sided coin. Sure, there are some environmental concerns that will be taken care of, I believe. And like I said, mining today does a whole lot better job. So.
It's got national significance as well as local.
Absolutely.
Randy, thank you for all the work you're doing down in Sarita. We're going to be bringing you back because you're a great interview. So I look forward to it. And that's Randy Graff, the president and CEO of the Green Valley Sarita Chamber of Commerce. Stay with us. Dr. Jeffrey Natsi of the new chancellor, not new, he's been around for a while now, with Pima Community College. He's new. He hasn't been around that long, Matt. Has been with us. We'll be bringing him in to talk all things community college. Good morning, and welcome back to Hour 2 of The Morning Voice. It's Tuesday, May 13th. Matt Neely's behind the glass, keeping us informed with the news, with the traffic, and keeping us on time and target. So I always appreciate Matt's engagement. Great pitch in with our earlier guest, Matt, talking politics with Randy Graff.
The 06 congressional primary brought back a lot of great memories for me. It was pretty wild between the media attention, and I just don't think there's been one since then. And it was just a really special year for me personally, just being involved
And it's not often that you have a CD race in the state of Arizona that is getting national attention. And I it's almost unheard of when the party actually pitches in with one of the candidates. So that was definitely an interesting time back in 2006. I'd like to say it's a lot different nowadays, but it really hasn't changed much.
it's different, but the same. Yeah.
So one thing that has remained the same in our community is the impact of Pima Community College to both our workforce, our economy, to our education system. It's such a critical factor and one of the truly shining stars that we have in this community. And now we're honored to have Dr. Jeffrey Natsi with us, who is the new, and we'll use new, I guess, loosely.
Reasonably new.
Reasonably new. I like that. Reasonably new chancellor of Pima Community College. Dr. Natsi, appreciate you being with us today. Look forward to having your voice to our listeners.
Good morning, Ted. It's great being here. Thank you for the opportunity.
Absolutely.
I appreciate it.
The opening is so true. Pima Community College plays such an incredible role here. From the business side of the house, you followed Chancellor Lee Lambert, who had a huge business following with some of his move towards workforce development. And you've hit the ground running, to say the least. I just want to give a couple highlights before we go down your story of what has happened in your first 100 days. You've connected with over 3,000 people in the community. You've attended 113 events in 100 days. That's a lot, considering you've got to take a couple days every once in a while for your own personal time, but 113 events, 31 meetings with business and governmental community leaders, 26 listen and learning and leading sessions that you attended as well, and numerous other athletic, cultural, and other events. You have truly embraced this community since you came in. So I want to thank you that and continue to welcome you to this. But this show is about engagement. So can you tell everybody a little bit about your background? You've been in the education system for working towards improving the education system, I should say, for a long time. So can you kind of lay your story? What brought you to Tucson?
Yeah, sure, Ted. And thanks again. And yeah, it's been a wonderful journey for my wife and I to come to Tucson and to join such a great organization like Pima Community College. So it's been wonderful. And yeah, the first 100 days was all about listening and learning, right, as I came to the community. You're right. Community colleges across the country play such an important place in terms of serving their community, developing workforce, economic development, all of that. And so I thought it was critical to get out there and learn something about Southern Arizona and Tucson and see what synergies we could develop and build on the great work that's already been done here at PCC. Yeah, in terms of my background, I mean, how much time do we have? But
Well, let's start the fact of your service.
Okay. Yeah.
So you served in the United States Marine Corps.
Yeah, absolutely.
Which if there's a service that all the other services look at, and I understand it's a subs of the Navy. A lot of us don't like to point that out. That gives too much credence to the Navy. But Marines, that's a special form of service.
Yeah,
and so I want to thank you for that.
Yeah, well, thank you for that. You know, it's been a while, right? I don't know if I could fit into my dress blues anymore. But I grew up the son of two teachers, I suppose, is important. So I grew up, and as the son of two teachers, right, what do you do as you're kind of, my parents really wanted me to go to college right out of high school and had big dreams. So being the oldest son and rebelling, what do? You join the Marine Corps. Not only do you join the Marine Corps, you join the infantry. But what a great learning experience, quite frankly, in the Marine Corps, serving as a machine gunner, active duty infantry unit. And during that experience, learned a lot about people. You know, I was coming from a very small town on the coast of Maine, probably about as far as from the old Pueblo as you could get. Grew up in New England, and the Marine Corps just, you know, taught me so much about leadership, teamwork, collaboration, and opportunity for people. And then coming out of that experience, going back to college was interesting as a non-traditional student. So I really feel for our student veteran students. It's just a different type of transition, and realizing, right, the service, as you know, is vast. People have all kinds of different experiences and backgrounds, but going to college can be a transition. And so we work hard at Pima. We have veteran support services on all our campuses to help ease in that transition back to civilian life. Just, you know, in terms of my background, yeah, I spent 20 plus years at, by all measures, really a high-performing community college in Broward College. It's Broward County, Florida. That's kind of the greater Fort Lauderdale area. And they really had a track record of success. So I was very fortunate to kind of build a career there. Started off teaching and kind of fell into that. You know, quite frankly, I graduated and had my master's degree and needed a gig. And my first one was teaching. I had never really had much experience with a community college. But I realized as soon as I got into that classroom that these were kind of different kinds of students. There were people in their 40s and 50s retraining, upskilling, going back to work. There were young students, dual enrollment students, looking for a leg up in terms of their college opportunities and everything in between. And it reminded me actually of the service, right? It was lots of different people with lots of different backgrounds who may not have otherwise had an opportunity to go to college. And I really just fell in love with that community college mission and built a career there in Broward. They have been recognized repeatedly nationally for some of their work in the community college space. So really had an opportunity to play for a winning team, if you will, for a long time. And then just a confluence of things. I was serving as the provost and senior vice president of operations there at Broward. And a headhunter, right, a recruiter reached out to me, which I was used to. We were being in a position, that type of position at a good organization. We did get those inquiries lots of times, but just a confluence of things. My youngest was headed off to the university. We were becoming empty nesters. I'd been at the organization for 20 plus years, had had a great career. And so when they reached out, I'd heard of Pima. Of course, community college is a small world. So I knew of Pima. I knew they were a reasonably large college. And you mentioned Chancellor Lambert. They'd really done some great work in the workforce area, workforce development. So, you know, I'd read some of the articles about them. So it was attractive. And as we learned, as my wife and I kind of learned more and more about Tucson, we said, hey, this could be a good fit. This is a place that we could feel at home and really do some good work and building on what's been a successful community college here. So that's kind of my story.
Well, you kind of move from the humid heat in Florida to Pima, but I can tell you your overall experience really stood out during the process. There was no doubt. I think you rose towards the top of the list fairly quickly on where we were, you know, and I was part of the selection committee.
Yeah.
And so I got to do that initial interview with you. And what I appreciated was your focus on the entire diversity and the responsibilities of the community college system.
Right.
You absolutely understood it. You believed in it. You've attended the university's got both your bachelor's and your master's from East Carolina University. And then you completed your PhD at Florida Atlantic University. But
sure,
you were about building a motivated team. When you moved out here, what was the first thing that surprised you? And what were you most happy to find when you came either out on your visit to Pima Community College before you accepted the job or after you had accepted the position of chancellor?
Yeah, so many things. And I think you're right about isn't that what it's all about, right? Is good team. You know, as you're putting together, as you're going through that job search, that application, you realize as you look back across your, it's all about the people that you work with and people lifting you up and you lifting other people up. And, but, you know, coming out, first of all, that the community, the support for Pima, to me, and I, you know, I've been to other community colleges. Of course, I've worked at another community college. I was really struck as I really went out to meet the community, how important the place that Pima had in the community. And regardless of whether I was talking to a business leader, a parent, going out to the Air Force Base, whoever I spoke to, they all talked to business industry leaders, all talked about how important Pima was in this in the ecosystem here. And that really stood out. I mean, community colleges are important wherever they serve, but it really stood out as, wow, Pima is a big deal here in Southern Arizona. And so I really felt that responsibility. Also the team that I inherited, right? I didn't know anyone. And so really getting to know people like Dr. Rourke, who is, you know, I've moved into the provost position now, and the existing team here, getting to know them, and they're doing some good work. So I think both of those things have been a process, right? As you're getting to know people, they're getting to know you, importantly, and figuring it out, that dynamic of what we're looking to do.
Well, I think it's an important sign of both your leadership and you, the way you came in and looked at this organization. You mentioned Dr. Rourke by name, but I think you have solidified keeping all of the key personnel that you came in and you found their value to this community college. And sometimes when you come in, particularly following somebody who was a well-respected leader, and you see, you know, the joke is always it's the, you know, the rat, the mice or the rats jumping off the ship. But the right. fact of the matter is you came into an organization that has so much support from the community. And the first thing you did as you assessed everybody in your organization was tighten that up.
For sure.
And that takes some work, and I want to compliment you on that
Thank you. Yeah.
And what you found in the, like you said, the team you inherited.
Yeah, I think it was important. I guess ultimately I'm a learner, right? So I wanted to sit down and kind of learn the team, learn the community, the relationships. And look, there are opportunities, of course, where we need to get better. But I didn't think it was a situation where, you know, we were in trouble in terms of accreditation. I know there were lots of good things happening. So the idea is build on those good things, those positive momentums, things like the Center of Excellence. We want to expand on that model, continue to look at our output in those areas, and then find new opportunities where we can get better. So it didn't make sense to me coming in to a new state, right? A new city, a new organization, all of those things to start over from scratch, right? It was important to kind of learn where we could build upon those things.
And in this community, that's especially true because there are a lot of diverse voices, diverse segments, diverse ideas. But one of the things that is common, you already mentioned it, is no matter what organization you were talking to, they're supportive and understand the importance of Pima Community College. So
sure.
We're going to cut to a break right now, but that's been the voice of Dr. Jeffrey Nassy, the chancellor at Pima Community College. I'm going to stop saying new because I think I think you've gotten well past that already in your time here. So if you have anybody has a question for him, please don't hesitate to call. 520-790-2040 is the phone number. And when we get back here on 1030 The Voice, trusted local news and talk, we'll talk about what he does see as the way ahead for Pima Community College and what his areas that he really wants to attack and make this community college even greater for our region. You're listening to 1030 The Voice.
Leonard Skinner on a windy Tuesday.
Welcome back. Now there's some music. That's again throwing me way back to high school basketball games and football games, listening on the bus, a little throwing it way back. That's good. So thank you, Matt Neely, behind the glass, keeping us on time, on target. Our guest this hour is Dr. Jeffrey Nassy, the chancellor of Pima Community College. You've jumped in with 100% of your effort into this community. You did it with your first 100 days, and nothing slowed down since then. Yeah, you're at about the 9-month point. What is the biggest thing that you've seen, or one, what are several of the things that you've seen in areas that you want to either leverage with Pima Community College, incorporate with Pima Community College we may be missing, or what's your vision in the short term for how you want to take the college?
Sure. Yeah, you know, I think for me, it begins and ends with student success. We can talk what that means, but I think every decision that we're making at Pima Community College is around the success of our students. So let's talk about that on the front end, right? Some fundamentals for a community college and serving the community is around access, making sure people have access to high quality post-secondary educational opportunities. And that can be a certificate short term into the trades, that can be the transfer mission, if that's what you want to do. And so, Ted, as you know, when I look, and I've, you know, our superintendents have been great, I've been getting to know our school districts and superintendents, of all the seniors that will be graduating this May here from our local high schools, less than half will go to any post-secondary education. And to me, that screams opportunity. So you have, you know, a group of students, right, that are going to the University of Arizona, some are coming to Pima and elsewhere. But to think that a majority of them are not going anywhere, to me, that is an opportunity for us right away in terms of engaging those students and getting more of those graduating seniors just as a fundamental to consider Pima Community College, right? It's high quality, and we're really proud of the value, right? If you look at the state university tuition, we're about a fifth of that, a fifth. And we believe there's great value there. And so, you know, one of the things, as you mentioned, the listening and learning and engaging the community, too often I would go to various events and people would come up and say, you know, we love Pima and my uncle went to Pima and we love Pima, but you know, my daughter or my son's at the high school and you don't really have a strong presence there. And so that's something that I've moved to do right away is we've reorganized to have a unit directly connected to our high schools. We want to deepen high school engagement. Again, thinking about that statistic, how do we get more students who are graduating? And by the way, we can talk about the graduation rates in Arizona and here locally need to be increased. But we need to get more of those students in the door at Pima. And I get it, right? And I was the same way, right? I mentioned when I left high school, I went into the service. You know, I wasn't ready for more school. But we have programs, like I mentioned, welding, automotive, building construction technology. We're going to open up a new space. Right now, we have about 2,000 square feet. We're going to open a 22,000 square foot facility around building construction technology, right? An area that's booming. Emergency services, public services, and public safety is an area we want to really grow in. We feel like our next center of excellence is around first responders. Huge need, great careers, right? And so always with the community college, it's understanding community need and then what kind of training can you provide to meet that need and give people viable career options. So that's one thing I noticed kind of on the front end, if you will, was that access mission. Meanwhile, Ted, right, we have people who have left high school who are working adult age and aren't participating in the labor force like they could, right?
Far
too many people who are either working under the table or not actively seeking employment of working age. And again, what we've talked about at Pima is this no wrong door strategy, right? Opening multiple doors to, if you will, adult learners, people that are out there who aren't maximizing the opportunity. Again, and it doesn't have to be 2 long years of school or 4 long years of school in debt, right? It can be short-term certificate programs in technology, health sciences, advanced manufacturing, and get into some really amazing areas and career opportunities at truly transformational wages for them and their family. And then on the back end, so this kind of beginning, getting into the college, making sure there's viable programming at the college and that we get more students through that training pipeline, is we're thinking a lot about post-completion, right? Yeah, I talk to students. It's always great this time of year. I'm at a lot of events congratulating students on their journey. And so many of them say, I want to go to the U of A, right? Of course, it's right here in Tucson, great universities. We got to make sure that transfer pipeline is really, right? Baccalaureate attainment, we know makes a huge difference. Over $1 million on average over a lifetime for people. We need to be make sure that we're filling that pipeline and, you know, making sure that students who come out of our two-year programs are getting placed immediately into jobs and meaningful careers. So we're really talking about how do we work with the business community to scale work-based learning, you know, to make sure that every student at Pima gets some sort of internship or capstone project with a small, medium, large business to kind of give them, that's part of the experience we want them to have at Pima. So lots of things, I think, at the kind of the beginning, entry into the college while they're in the college programmatically, and then leaving the college and making sure, you know, what does a community look like if 75% of graduating seniors are going to high school? You know, what does it look like? Right now we're putting out around 600 nurses. We've just opened up our new Center of Excellence in Health Professions. What does 1,200 nurses look like coming out of Pima? Those are major community impacts. That's what we think about in terms of the vision is based around kind of maximizing those outcomes.
And to your point, you've talked about multiple different industries that you're supporting and getting people directly into the workforce. And we know the nursing shortage and the healthcare shortage, the public safety shortage, everyone you're talking about, you know, and you look at some of the other ones you have, the air, you know, we need more folks that are HVAC qualified. Pima Community College is where you can hit those trades. But I want to go back to something that you said that's actually really scary. If only 51% or 50% of the high school graduates are even entering advanced education, and you acknowledge what a bachelor's degree, $1 million over a lifetime, well, any education significantly steps up the amount somebody's going to earn over their lifetime.
Yeah,
so,
absolutely.
So what do you think is the driver right now that's keeping such a low percentage, and we may later in the show get into the high school percentage of high school graduates, but a low percentage of those that who are eligible to go to some form of secondary education, what is it that's the barrier that's holding them back?
Yeah, and that's part of my learning curve. I don't know, right? And it probably depends on the situation and on the student and their experience. I don't know. I know on our end, we need to make sure that we have a very strong presence in our high schools. So instead of that person coming up to me and saying, you know, we don't feel that presence, I want people to come up to me and say, wow, Pima, we are sick of Pima. They are there every seventh period talking about their opportunities. We have to, I think from my position, I want to make the opportunities that Pima Community College presents inescapable to our high school students. And that means deep engagement. By the way, that starts in middle school.
Absolutely.
So what are we doing to bring, you know, middle school students onto our campuses and give them a taste of that Pima experience?
And we're going to go to a break right now at the bottom of the hour. You're listening to Jeff Nasi, the Chancellor of Pima Community College. A lot of great ideas, a lot more to talk about. There's a little Florida music for you as you come back.
Yeah, no swamps like in Maine.
No swamps in Maine. Plenty of swamps in Florida.
For sure.
But no swamps in Maine. So my guest this hour is Dr. Jeffrey Nasi, the Chancellor of Pima Community College. So you went from gators and swamps. What wildlife-wise has been the most unique thing that you've gotten to experience or you've learned about the desert?
Well, all of it, right? When I first came, I saw a tarantula was outside of my Airbnb when I first hit the ground. So that was a little unsettling. But it's been, you know, my wife and Chris and I have really enjoyed hiking, right? When in Rome, right? So we're in Southern Arizona. We really got into hiking and just amazing natural beauty here in this state. It's really remarkable.
Do you have a favorite hike so far?
We like Sabino Canyon and that area and some of the trails there. We've done Blackett's Ridge, we've done Telephone, and, you know, we've done a lot of those kind of hikes. We did hike down into the Grand Canyon a bit and did that over the holiday break, of course, right? We're in Arizona. We
absolutely
want to get up to the Grand Canyon. And so really just enjoying the state, enjoying, of course, locally. Yeah. All that it has to offer.
Yeah, the environment is definitely one of those selling points of this region, and truly is amazing. Let's go back to some of the education stuff. We talked about the fact that only 50% of high school graduates are getting degrees, and that's only 70% of the high school population. So
right.
If you add that 30% that doesn't even graduate and get a degree, I mean, we are really missing an opportunity. And you cited a stat that a lot of people don't like to talk about. That's labor force participation rates. We're at one of the lowest amount of individuals between 25 and 64 who are actually working or actively looking for a job.
Right.
And that leads to a lot of lost opportunity. and we were timing out a lot of things. A lot of focus on your contribution to the workforce and what the college does. You've mentioned some of the areas you're thinking about expanding. Where do you see some of the opportunities that the PCC can contribute even more than they already are, which is a huge amount into our workforce?
I think in a lot of our areas, so just aviation maintenance, you know, and thinking about that, we can't put them out fast enough, the graduates, right? We have employers kind of knocking down our doors trying to get our students right away. So how do we continue to expand? I mentioned the healthcare area. Again, how do we continue to facilitate expansion in terms of taking more students in, having more students succeed, and then, you know, the output of those students? Hey, like everyone else right now, artificial intelligence is changing the way we think about education in so many different ways. We have an amazing cybersecurity program out at our East Campus. It's one of our centers of excellence. And so layering artificial intelligence opportunities in terms of training. In June, through our Small Business Development Center at Pima Community College, we're offering an artificial intelligence class for small business owners, right? That's a huge, no matter what you're doing, right? AI can do so many things to just advance your processes. So from the artificial intelligence, we're thinking about, first of all, our faculty are amazing. I was at a workshop the other day with our faculty to see some of the things, how they're integrating AI into the student learning experience across disciplines is so important, right? We know for sure, no matter what students leave with, that employers want people with AI experience. So how do we integrate that across all of our curriculum? How do we use AI as an organization to be more efficient in the way we're doing things? And then, of course, what skills can we, what are the, you know, whether that's in healthcare, manufacturing, artificial intelligence, so layering that on top of all of those programs is something that we're really excited about as well.
So it's an interesting conundrum sort of with artificial intelligence, because trying to incorporate it, trying to teach your faculty and give them the skill set needed to incorporate AI successfully into the curriculum is incredibly important. And, you know, what we hear about now is that, read an article just the other day that said, don't fool yourself, 100% of the students attending universities right now are using AI to help in their submittal of projects. So what are you finding early in this AI changeover is going to be most helpful that you're able to provide to both your instructors and to your students?
Yeah, I think we're fortunate because, you know, our faculty are teaching us, right? They're out there taking the lead in their discipline, really kind of learning about what this could look like. It's funny, I sat in a writing, right, kind of a classic English composition class, which is where I cut my teeth many years ago as an instructor. And to see how that faculty member was using artificial intelligence to get students to think about the questions they ask, the prompts. Look, it's going to be different. It's not like when I went to college, you know, sitting there writing that five paragraph essay. It's going to change. You know, we're old enough to remember when online was just becoming a thing and online learning. You know, could you imagine now a world in education where online wasn't used? No, of course not, right? It's integrated into everything we do. And I think it's going to be the same with AI. Yes, we have to think about responsibility and ethics, and ultimately it's about learning. So we have to think about the way we're delivering education. Another thing we're excited about, and maybe it goes to getting more people to finish that, is acceleration and flexibility for our students. The way we deliver education now is not when I went to school, where you sat there for 16 weeks and listened to someone like me go on and on. No, it needs to be fast. There has to be options. Students like that in-person experience, but they also want that flexibility. So we're really looking at what can we do to make these 8-week classes and really accelerate. We need our students work, right? They're part-time, they're working. And so how can we provide that flexibility for them so they can achieve their goals faster?
Well, I think that's a great point, because nobody can envision education now without online capacity. And nobody in the future is going to envision it with AI. It's something we have to embrace and have to figure out how to still make that graduate the highest quality graduate for the workforce or for their life, and have an understanding of the benefit of AI, not the detriment, but the benefit.
Yeah, absolutely. And we see it emerging in all kinds of different ways across industries. So it's really exciting.
Okay, we have a caller. Greg's with us on line two. I think he's got a comment and maybe a question for you as well, Dr. Nassy.
Great.
Greg, welcome to the show.
Thanks, Ted. First off, I'd like to say, I'd like to take my hat off to the committee. I'm guessing there was a committee that screened to try to find a new chancellor, because this guy you got with us on the air today, Jeff, the enthusiasm that you show, the ideas that you have, man, I tell you, they did a good job picking you.
Oh, thank you. I appreciate that.
Yeah, listen, about a decade ago, there was an article in the Arizona Daily Star with a photo of my mom, who was taking a couple of classes at Pima, and she was 83 at the time. So you see her in class with these 20-year-olds, and I'll tell you what, it was a great experience for her because she didn't have a great deal of knowledge about getting online using the computer and writing. There was a writing class that was offered that she loved.
Sure.
So I know we're focusing now on young folks out of high school, but there's also a place for people like me. I'm 76. I'm interested in learning in that June class on AI, and I need to sign up. What's the deadline on signing up?
I don't know if there's a deadline. I think you still have some time, certainly, to sign up. But to your point, yes, lifelong learning, right? We have, and I think even graduating this May, we have someone in their 70s. And it's not uncommon, right, that we have people of all kinds of different ages sitting in our classroom. In fact, I go to some of these student awards ceremonies, and there are very often, right, students, you know, 40s, 50s, who are upskilling. Maybe they're just wanting to advance their career, or they're starting something new. And so that's, again, one of the – and guess what? That also informs the entire – you're right, if there are, you know, younger people in the class – it's wonderful to have students with so much life experience in that class with them to share those lessons. So it's great. It's great synergy. But yes, the June class, I think there's still an opportunity to sign up. I don't know a deadline off the top of my head.
Yeah, Ted, do I have a moment? I have another idea I'd like to share with Jeff.
If you could make it quick, Greg, you've got time.
Sure. My young friend who's graduating from Bush Ridge is going to go to school at Hillsdale. They brought her back there. They wined her and dined her and introduced her to the campus. So does Pima Community College reach out beyond Tucson? Let's say there's a kid in Southern California that decides, hey, I want to go away to school. Do you try to approach those folks to have them come to Tucson, Jeff?
Right now, most of our marketing and our efforts are on the local community. We're primarily focused on getting more people from Southern Arizona, Pima County, into the college. We do have international students who come to Pima to attend, and we have some population of out-of-state, like you mentioned, California. So that's certainly an area of growth, particularly in our online. You know, Pima's got a great online program that's been nationally recognized, and we do see people from out-of-state choosing us. And that's really something we talk about. How do we become the educational provider of choice, right? There's lots of competition out there. Seems like there's new colleges popping up in strip malls and online all over the place. And so we realize, right, that people have lots of choices. And so how do we make ourselves that top quality, affordable, accessible provider of choice in terms of post-secondary education? But to your question, Greg, you know, right now we really want to focus on serving that local community first and foremost, and that would be a secondary consideration, but always something to think about, right, is how do we bring more folks into the college?
Greg, we appreciate you joining us today, and thanks for the call, and thank you for listening. Before we go to the break, we've kind of talked about the different avenues. We just heard adult education, continuing education. We've talked about the workforce of the future, including people in the workforce coming back and getting reskilled. One thing we have not talked about, Matt, I think you might have a question that you want to?
Sure. I was just going to ask, you know, I've been following the subject for several years. Do you have any four-year degree now, or do you have any plans for four-year degrees in targeted specific need areas?
Yeah, thank you for that, Matt. In fact, where I came from, right, I worked a lot. We were one of the first to offer what we call the Community College Baccalaureate four-year degrees. We had 10 when I left Florida. And so that's definitely an area, an opportunity, Matt, that we need to go on. Yes, our board has approved us to go forward with a teacher education four-year degree. By the way, education, another great space of community.
Huge need. Huge need.
And so we're excited about, we're thinking about what does a teacher education center of excellence look like. But we have, yes, we are moving forward with a four-year degree. We're not offering yet, but in the next couple years, we will be launching that four-year teacher education degree. And right behind that, we're thinking in the cybersecurity, artificial intelligence space would be another opportunity for a four-year degree as well. So yes, we definitely have one en route and another coming soon.
Great news.
So that's the voice of Dr. Jeff Nassy, the Chancellor of Pima Community College, giving us a lot of insight on the potential future of Pima Community College and how it will look and its continuation to make a larger impact on Southern Arizona, our community. We'll be back with him after the break. You're listening to 1030 The Voice, trusted local news and talk. Good morning and welcome back to The Morning Voice. I'm your host, Ted Maxwell. I encourage everyone to tune in every morning from 7 to 9 to listen to The Morning Voice. And tomorrow you will have Grant Kruger with Food for Thought. As we like to say, you get to open with Grant's rant and then go into a discussion both on the food environment around Tucson and what it drives in our economy, but with Grant, you're also going to get your share of politics. I also encourage you to stay on for the following this show for Wynn Tucson and your host, Kathleen Wynn. And you know, she'll always have topics of high interest.
And a special sneak preview Friday with Dr. Ed Ackerley during the 7 o'clock hour, the Bishop Kikanis from the Diocese of Tucson.
Matt, what do you think they'll be talking about?
Anything been happening in the Catholic Church lately?
I'm not sure. So
he said press release, he said that he knows the new Pope, Leo XIV, and so it'll be interesting hearing that insight.
That will be a great opportunity. So as I said at the start, let's support The Morning Voice. We appreciate all our listeners and folks who provide us feedback. Please continue to tune in. So my guest this hour has been Dr. Jeff Nassy, the Chancellor for Pima Community College, and welcome again to Tucson. It has been 9 months. You're still learning a lot about this region.
For sure.
Tarantulas, you know, if you've encountered your first rattlesnake yet,
Not yet.
And seen some of the good stuff. But we are very grateful to have you in this community.
You're
continuing a tradition of that at Pima Community College that gets a lot of support and recognition. It's such a critical asset to this region. I think you've mentioned that already. We've got probably about 2.5 or maybe 3 minutes. We've got about 2.5 minutes left. I want to leave this time with you to make sure that anything that you want our listeners to know about the college and where it's going.
I spoke about some of the programs, just lots of options one of the things I'd wish I could capture in a bottle is when I talk to students, they all talk about that student experience, that Pima experience, right? I've had students that go off to different universities and are very successful, and people who've come back and they all speak highly of Pima. Remember, in terms of value, right, about a fifth of the cost of our state universities, which are great, and you're in a small classroom, right? You're working with 25 or so other students. You're working very closely with our faculty, and those type of meaningful connections are so important for our learners, right? That is the experience you get. As you know, we have world-class facilities at Pima Community College at all of our campuses spread around Pima County.
Campuses that people don't realize quite often. There's five campuses, one close to you.
Each of them has something different to offer, but they're all outstanding in terms of facilities. So I think great faculty, a caring staff, great facilities. So we're really proud of the value that we can, and lots of options. Again, if you're there for a certificate, we can provide it. If you're looking to transfer, we can support that for you as well. And so that's another thing we're proud of is lots of different options. And you know, Ted, I get a lot of students who think they want to be nurses or think they want to work in cybersecurity or what have you. And then they get in there and they say, you know what? Maybe graphic design is an area that I'm interested. You know, maybe business. We have a great relationship with the Eller College over at the U of A with our business students, and they do very well going over there. And so there's lots of synergies, lots of partnerships. You know, we were one of the first community colleges to offer registered apprenticeships in Arizona. So we have great relationships with Leonardo and those kind of corporations where we're doing Caterpillar apprenticeships. So again, it's we're kind of career-driven and a high-quality student experience. You know, as I'm sitting here, you know, some of that starts at the top. I'd be remiss if I don't recognize what a great governing board that we have. You know, Greg Taylor of Arizona Complete Health is our chair. He's outstanding. Our vice chair is Carla Bernal Morales, who I've actually heard on this program. I believe she's come. We have Dr. Nicole Barraza, of course, that you know well. Board member Teresa Rial, who served at the college as a faculty member, and then Kristen Randall also. And so they're just outstanding, a super supportive group. And first and foremost, again, student success is the priority at Pima.
Dr. Nasi, appreciate you being on with me. I guarantee we will have you on again. And you're listening
to
1030 The Voice, trusted local news and talk. Everybody have a great week.